I'm Brandi Cruz, coming up today on Undivided. According to a progressive group in Washington state, it is Donald Trump's fault that left-wing lunatics are attacking signature gatherers. Got it. Plus, a new approach to fighting sex trafficking in Seattle will include strongly worded letters. And President Donald Trump says he wants to send federal troops into San Francisco. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. Final live show of the week. How depressing is that? We've got a great Sunday show coming up for you, though, for subscribers. My friend Andy Ngo, who's the OG of covering Antifa, is going to be joining us for an extended interview reflecting on our visit to the White House and what happens here in the efforts to dismantle left-wing terrorism. Speaking of left-wing terrorism, let me share with you the dumbest thing that I've read on the internet, I would say all month so far. It comes from the Northwest Progressive Institute, which is basically an arm of the Democratic Party in Washington state. It's run by a political operative. Here's the headline. Let's Go Washington and Brian Haywood reckon with the rising proclivity for political violence fomented by America's right wing. It says, violence begets violence. It's therefore not surprising that Republicans and right-wing organizers are now experiencing an increase in political violence themselves. Yes. Yes, you're understanding the premise of this blog post correctly. And although this is a basement blogger, he is someone who's very influential within progressive and democratic circles in the state of Washington. He is, as I said, essentially a political operative. And his argument is all of these many dozen instances of signature gatherers being harassed and threatened and assaulted by left-wing lunatics because they want to protect girls' sports and protect parental rights, all of that is because of Donald Trump. It never ceases to amaze me, the things that they will shoehorn into blaming on Donald Trump. And I'm going to get into how vile and toxic this sentiment is that he's pushing out there, and obviously how ridiculous it is. But the timing is also pretty disgusting. These attacks on signature gatherers continue, and they continue to escalate. And now we're having people suffer some pretty serious injuries as a result of the left-wing violence and rhetoric that entities like the Northwest Progressive Institute are spewing. In fact, just yesterday in Poulsbo, a 68-year-old woman was out collecting signatures outside a Walmart when she was attacked. She's got a massive bruise under her arm. And this has been confirmed by the Poulsbo Police Department. Essentially, this 43-year-old woman identified in police reports as Amanda Lee Haynes of Kingston, Washington, walked in, saw the signature gathering booth and talking about, you know, keeping boys out of girls' sports. She called the 68-year-old victim an effing C-U-N-T, a bigot and a bitch. And then when she came outside, she hurled a cart at the signature gathering table, and it caused this injury to this 68-year-old woman. And the surveillance video that the police obtained from Walmart, they say, confirms the account of the victim. So they arrested the suspect, Amanda Lee Haynes, at her place of employment for three charges, including assault, disorderly conduct, and violating the state statute that prohibits interference with signature gathering. So there's some very serious things happening. We talked on the show yesterday about how someone allegedly brandished a handgun at individuals who were collecting signatures, although it's kind of a he said situation. We're not sure if it's going to be enough to prosecute in that case. So all of that's going on, and you have this arm of the Democratic Party in Washington state that is saying it's Donald Trump's fault. Let's continue to read, shall we? So first, they started by claiming, this Andrew Villeneuve way, claiming that, oh, we don't want these signature gatherers to be harassed. We don't want this to happen. It says the right to petition is a protected constitutional right, and it's a right we feel very strongly about here at the Northwest Progressive Institute. Everyone deserves to be able to circulate or sign a petition if they want to without having to fear that they'll be punched or spat on or yelled at or anything of that sort. Mutual respect is very important in healthy democracy. It allows people to disagree peaceably without coming to blows, and it maximizes freedoms, and it helps everyone's cherished First Amendment rights. Doesn't that sound nice? It's weird because this exact institute, Northwest Progressive Institute, back in 2023, while signature gatherers were being harassed and attacked, this exact institute sent one of its minions down to Olympia to testify against a bill that would have added additional protections for signature gatherers.
The bill refers to only people collecting signatures. There's another way to participate in the process, and that is to share with someone who is considering signing a petition what I believe to be the truth, what somebody believes to be true. I had an experience once where I heard someone saying incredibly vile things about gay people, and I interrupted and I corrected, and my 3-year-old daughter actually said, please stop saying that. You're hurting people I love. That would have been that would be prohibited.
Yeah, so the Northwest Progressive Institute went all the way to Olympia in 2023 to argue that they should have a right to be able to harass signature gatherers because we're just bad people. Conservatives bad, conservatives ideas bad, so you can't pass a law to protect people who are collecting signatures on issues so hateful. So they advocate against it in 2023, no protections for you, and now they're putting out this article saying, oh, we want signature gatherers to be treated with respect, but the reason they're not being treated with respect is because Donald Trump has fomented this environment in America. The article goes on to say, mutual respect has been evaporating in this country at an exponential rate as Donald Trump, the Republican Party, and their fascist allies foment political violence to a degree that America has not seen in a very long time. There was a time when top Republicans shunned right-wing extremism, but nowadays they embrace it. They apparently figure that it helps them and wager it's worth any possible blowback. They say it's easy for Brian Haywood to tell Como News and other journalists that violence and intimidation shouldn't be the way we resolve an issue when it's his people who are being harassed. But when it comes to, say, masked goons violently seizing people off our streets, see an example below of a girl being forced to the ground with a knee then brutally placed on her neck, Haywood has nothing to say. So his argument is about Brian Haywood has been making the rounds on news, and he, of course, is the backer of the Let's Go Washington initiatives, and he's been talking about these very numerous, very severe instances of signature gatherers being harassed. And Northwest Progressive Institute says he shouldn't be able to do that because he won't speak out against the violence being perpetrated by ICE agents, or as he refers to them, masked goons. And again, just got done talking about we need mutual respect. And we believe in, you know, peaceful pushback and gathering signatures, mutual respect, as he calls people who support Donald Trump fascists. Again, stupidest thing I've read on the internet this month, but it shows the mindset of the party in power in Washington state. He goes on to write, Haywood himself said that the violence is 10 times worse than it was in 2023. And he says his prior petition drives were all during Joe Biden's presidency. What has been the major change in our politics during the intervening months? Trump's narrow 2024 victory, return to power, and Republicans regaining a trifecta. That's what. This second Trump regime is all about vengeance and retribution. They are quite willing to resort to violence, harassment, and intimidation to get what they want. That's why goons in ICE's employ have been instructed to hurt people, and it's why the National Guard keeps getting illegally federalized over the objections of state governors. Violence begets violence. It's therefore not surprising that Republicans and right-wing organizers are now experiencing an increase in political violence themselves. They unleashed a monster, metaphorically speaking, and they can't control it. Even if they haven't personally called for political violence, repeatedly enabling and abetting those who have done so makes them fully complicit. What a stupid argument is that? And also, to the point that he was attempting to make here. He's saying that during the Joe Biden presidency, the last time Let's Go Washington was running initiatives, the violence wasn't as bad. There was still violence. There was still harassment of lawful signature gatherers. It's because the left wing has done exactly what he is accusing Republicans here of doing under Donald Trump, resorting to violence, harassment, and intimidation to get what they want. No, that's exactly what the left in Washington state has done for years when it comes to conservative-backed initiatives. And really, when it comes to anything else, you have full control in the state of Washington, yet you resort to violence, harassment, shaming, public intimidation whenever anyone steps out of line just a little bit. That is the playbook. That is the playbook. It's not because of Donald Trump. It's because of you. It's because of articles like this. It's because of organizations like the Northwest Progressive Institute that label people who they disagree with as hateful, bigot, fascist, and they send their minions out there to harass them, to assault them, and to stop them from participating in the democratic process. He also has a call to action for me. Can't wait to hear this. Although right-wing media figures love to yap endlessly about Antifa, the data suggests that they are more at risk from disgruntled extremists in their own ranks than they are from anyone on the left. Right-wing on right-wing violence is a thing. And he uses a report that I have talked extensively about being completely off base to try to justify his obviously wrong-headed assertion that right-wing violence somehow poses more of a threat in a state like Washington than left-wing violence. He says, we challenge Brian Haywood, Brandi Cruz, Jonathan Cho, and all in league with them to do the same. Your values may differ, but you can still be committed to nonviolence consistently. Your demands for civility and enforcement of our laws ring hollow when you're actively enabling the dangerous rhetoric, violent behavior, and illegal acts of the Trump regime. Remember, respect is a two-way street. You're not treating others the way you want to be treated, let alone the way they want to be treated. Interesting. Can you give me one example of me pushing violence or supporting violence? One example. One example. That's all I need. Surely, if you're saying that I'm doing it so frequently, that I'm supporting political violence on the right, I would love just one single solitary example of that. Of course, you don't have any single solitary examples of that. And when you say you're not treating others the way you want to be treated, let alone the way they want to be treated, I don't know if you're referring to me not being willing to call a man a woman. Well, yeah, that's probably not the way they want to be treated, but I operate in reality. So the whole thing is totally unhinged. And I will say, I think it, to me, brings back up the notion that entities like this should be investigated by the federal government. I really believe that. So we're looking at Antifa and ways Antifa can be dismantled. And one of the aspects of that is the funding mechanism. Where are they getting some of the funds, some of these organizations that show up and have these events where people are hurt, where violence ensues? And similarly, this isn't by accident. This just isn't, you know, natural that you have so many instances of signature gatherers being harassed and having their pages torn up and being assaulted. It's clearly coordinated. Where is that coordination coming from? I've said I think that we need an investigation into entities that have funded things like snitch lines. And this is interesting. I think I wonder if they know that this is potentially coming. Remember we talked about WA Families for Freedom? This is a group that opposes the initiatives, and they've called themselves WA Families for Freedom, which is just stupid. But a couple weeks ago on their website, they had a form and a hotline that you could call to report signature gathering. It said, have you seen someone collecting signatures for a Washington ballot measure? We want to hear about it. Please share the details below. And this is similar to what happened. The state Democratic Party ran a snitch line along with their cronies at Fuse Washington in 2023 saying, tell us what the person looked like. Tell us what they were wearing. And the plan was, of course, to send out their minions to go harass them. That was the goal. But as soon as we started raising awareness for the fact that this snitch line that's being funded by the Washington Education Association, the Gender Justice League, Pro-Choice Washington, ACLU of Washington. As soon as we pointed out that this was obviously a coordinated effort to undermine democracy that was being paid for by some of the largest donors to the Democratic Party, guess what happened? They took it down. About a week ago, they decided to take it down. Is that because they realize it's wrong? Is that because they realize that now the federal government might be interested to looking into this? That tells me that they know there's some there. Because if you're not doing anything wrong, why take the snitch line down? You were obviously very proud of it. You displayed it prominently on your website. If you weren't doing anything wrong, if you weren't encouraging and funding the harassment of lawful signature gatherers, why take the snitch line down, huh? It's because they know they're doing something wrong. It's because they know where a close look at their books would lead. And I think it would show a couple things. And this is especially true for the Washington Education Association, which was funding the snitch line, the Gender Justice League, and the ACLU of Washington. They also supported the harassment of lawful signature gatherers back in 2023. They are large recipients of taxpayer funds. And I think if the FBI were to crack open their books, they would find payments to groups that have been engaged in left-wing extremism. I genuinely believe that. And if the FBI is interested in looking into it, I intend to help them in any way possible. These organizations shouldn't get a dime of taxpayer funds. And think about how nefarious that is. Washington Education Association gets tens of millions of dollars from the Democratic Party in taxpayer funds to run programs that don't do anything. And it's because they turn around and they use that money to fund Democratic political campaigns. So taxpayer money is used to go to the WEA, to turn around and fund Democratic political campaigns, and to fund things like this, the harassment of lawful signature gatherers. It's time the FBI looks into it. And while you're at it, I would look into the Northwest Progressive Institute as well, because they seem pretty keen on gaslighting people into thinking that Donald Trump is the cause for all of this, oh my gosh, spontaneous assault on signature gatherers. It's not spontaneous, it's coordinated, as with most instances of left-wing violence. One more thing I want to talk about, just because it bothers me to the core in this article, because again, these are the progressives. Oh my God, we're so woke. We love BIPOC people, you know, we love Black people. We are so woke and amazing. Here's what they say about the paid signature gathering effort for Let's Go Washington. Eyewitnesses have told Northwest Progressive Institute that Haywood is employing young Black men to collect signatures for his two culture war measures. How dare he employ Black people? Wow, I thought that was a good thing. Apparently not. Judging by their reactions after they got some information about what they were collecting signatures for, they were not properly briefed or trained prior to being sent out in the field. So he is citing anonymous eyewitnesses telling him that Brian Haywood has Black people out collecting these signatures, and these dumb Black people don't even know what the initiatives are all about, which is quite fascinating. Because unlike Northwest Progressive Institute, I have actually gone out and spoken to and met many of these paid signature gatherers. Yes, many of whom are Black. One of the examples, we had him on our show, is a man named Andre Scott, who has been subjected to some of this harassment of these left-wing lunatics. And one of the questions I asked him is, do you know or support the initiatives you're out there collecting signatures for? Because in this case, the Northwest Progressive Institute thinks you as a Black man can't possibly support these things, and you're really too dumb to even understand them. Do you support these initiatives, the idea behind them?
Absolutely. Yes, ma'am. I support them. Myself, I've got two daughters myself. And that's one of the passion that drove me to do this. It's just not about the money. You know, this is in order to do canvassing, ma'am, you have to have a certain passion. You have to have it. There's got to be something in the initiative that you've got to like and want, you know, for yourself before you could give it to the public.
Does that sound like a Black man who is duped and too dumb to understand what he's out there collecting signatures for? No, it sounds like someone who, yes, gets paid, does this as a living around the country, but said in order to sell it, in order to convince people to sign it, you have to believe in it yourself. And he's got young daughters, and he wouldn't want boys playing against girls. And every signature gatherer that I have been out there speaking to, whether they're paid or unpaid, believes 100% in what they're collecting signatures for. These aren't anonymous people, oh, like the eyewitnesses that the Northwest Progressive Institute just happens to say are talking to these Black signature gatherers, and they had no clue what they were out there collecting signatures for. No, quite the contrary. They're out there collecting signatures for something that they believe in. And they say, by the way, Andrew with the Northwest Progressive Institute, that of all the places they've collected signatures across the entire country, the woke white leftists like yourself in Washington State have been the most cruel to them. Here's another example.
You said this is the worst it's ever been.
Is it? People doing crazy stuff.
Literally. I've done this before, but this today was like the most crazy thing.
Yeah. I'm sorry about that. I appreciate you guys being brave.
Of course.
Thank you.
We got to do the right thing.
gotta do the right thing. And I think that's one of the most disgusting parts of this stupid blog post that I don't even want to give attention to, except for it shows the mindset of the Democratic Party. Everything is Donald Trump's fault. Even if someone who they support and identify with goes out and harasses someone, assaults someone, they will always find a way to blame it on Donald Trump. But this to me is the most poison toxic, and it really just exposes the progressive movement for what it is. They don't care about black people. They don't have a high opinion of people of color. They think so low of them that they think that any person who's not white is too dumb and can't think for themselves. And if they're out collecting signatures for these initiatives, someone must have pulled the wool over their eyes. Yeah, very progressive. How very progressive of you. Wild. All right, in the city of Seattle, taxes are about to go up yet again to pay for something that the city has a fundamental basic mandate to address. First, I have told you guys to take the First Mark Challenge, firstmarkinsurance.com. You could save money, get better insurance in the process. It's super simple and it never costs you anything. So it really is a no-brainer. I'm a member of the First Mark family. Nicole's a member of the First Mark family. Our business is insured through First Mark. And so many undivided viewers and listeners have taken the First Mark Challenge and have a First Mark success story to tell. Viewer Lisa, who says that she reached out to First Mark. They couldn't help her with her personal insurance because it turned out she already had great insurance. They said, hey, don't change that. But they did help her with her business insurance and saved her 50% a year on their rates and gave her more coverage for her business. So whether it's personal or business, ask First Mark Insurance to take a look for you. FirstMarkInsurance.com. Again, totally free to take the First Mark Challenge. FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance company. So they always have your best interest in mind. All right. So there are some basic, I think this is pretty agreed upon. There's some basic fundamental things that the government needs to do. And public safety is one of them, right? You can add all this long list of things you want the government to do or hope the government will do, but basic public safety, police, fire, emergency response, this should be a pretty agreed upon thing. And because it's one of the core functions of government, it should be, you know, one of the first things to get funded. And you should have a mandate to make sure that your budget is properly equipped to deal with public safety needs. But here is the sick cycle that's been going on in cities like Seattle. Massive bloated budgets. Yeah, spend it on public safety. But then they pass policies that explicitly undermine public safety and make public safety so bad that you'll agree to more taxes. Because again, public safety is one of those things where, gosh, if it's on the ballot or whatever it is, everybody wants to feel safe. Everyone deserves to feel safe. And so it's more likely they'll pass a tax. Oh my gosh, because things feel really bad. Public safety crisis is pretty bad. So I guess they just need more money to deal with it. No, they need more money to deal with it because they pissed away the money they already had that was supposed to go to it. And they only made the problem worse because of their failed policies and their failed agenda. So now the city of Seattle is about to have the highest sales tax in the nation, because it went through the police defunding movement, scared cops out of the city, experimented with drug decriminalization and soft on crime policies. And now it finds itself, despite, you know, spending billions of dollars on the crime crisis in recent years, it finds itself needing more money. So Seattle sales tax could hit 10.45% after the council okays an increase for public safety. Now, I always get calls after I talk about this from moderate Democrats saying, but Brandy, you know, this money is going to be focused on addiction treatment and crisis response. And my response to that is good. We need to focus on treatment, not just leaving people on the streets to die in filth and squalor. But you have more than enough money to do that. And the only reason you need more money to deal with people who are addicted to drugs is because you all thought it was a good idea to experiment with drug decriminalization and to take a hands-off approach with the homeless crisis and the drug crisis and the mental health crisis. So you pushed what were very obviously going to be failed policies, made the crisis much worse, and now you're coming back to us for more money? From My Northwest, Seattle's sales tax could hit 10.45%, one of the highest in the country. The Seattle City Council approved a 0.1% public safety tax increase on Tuesday, which now awaits Mayor Bruce Harrell's signature. He must sign it by October 18th to lock in the full revenue. So he's got 2 days and he'll sign it. The new tax would raise $39 million next year for public safety, including $7.5 million for addiction treatment and crisis response teams. The entire council voted in favor of the tax hike, except for Councilwoman Maritza Rivera, who claimed it would hurt low-income families. Here is the councilwoman's explanation as to why she voted no.
I struggled with this vote. This tax proposal is of concern to me because basically what it does is tax poor people to help poor people. I say this because, as we know, sales taxes are the most regressive taxes that governments can levy, and they hit our low-income families the hardest. While groceries are exempt from sales tax, there are many other items that our low-income communities purchase that are not exempt, like clothing and shoes for their kids, among many other important needs. We know we have an affordability problem in Seattle, and this proposal is just going to make things worse. Combined with the recent 0.1% sales tax increase levied by King County, Seattle's sales tax will be 10.55%, which is higher than San Francisco, New York City, Chicago, Boston. Even among the 8 states without an income tax, we're still at the top compared to cities of our size. And what's more, this comes instead of what we really need to be doing, taking a very hard look at the city's budget. For these reasons, I will not be supporting this proposal today. Thank you.
And she's right. She's right across the board. You know, they want to be out there screeching, and it just absolutely gives away the grift. They want to screech about, you know, taxes and the disproportionate impact on the poor, yet every single day, it seems, a city or a county or at the state level, they are passing something that will disproportionately impact the poor and middle class to fund stuff that they should already be able to fund in their basic budget. And instead, they want to, what, give money to illegal immigrants and help illegal aliens, avoid ICE and do all of these things. And then they come back and they ask you for more money to feel safe. They want you. And this is the thing. They make these crises worse intentionally. So they can come back to you and say, wow, things are getting really scary out there. So we just need more money. And most, you know, passive news consumers will just say, oh, well, if it's for public safety, oh, if it's for addiction treatment, if it's for crisis response, I should probably go ahead and allow you to do that. But like, when is enough enough? You know, if this was some unforeseen expense that popped up for the city in some unforeseen economic situation, maybe it would be different. But public safety is never an unforeseen need of the government. And the public safety issues we're dealing with right now weren't unforeseen. They were planned. If I wanted to make the public safety crisis worse in a city, I would do exactly what the city of Seattle has done. So I support the effort to get more people into drug treatment, but you can do it with the money you already have. Stop spending money on stuff you don't need to spend money on. It's really that simple. And at some point, we have to put our foot down and say, we care about these issues, but until you show us that you have a plan that actually works, we're not going to continue to piss away billions of dollars. And it's not like it's just happening here. Every West Coast city that we talk about dealing with these crises is dealing with the same thing. Self-inflicted crises that they think that they can get out of by taxing you more, despite the fact that taxing you more to fix those things in the past only made them worse. So I don't know what else I could say about this issue to wake people up. And it, you know, this is being pushed by some of the more moderate members of the city council, like the city council president, Nelson. And I admire what she's trying to do, but she's a businesswoman and she should know that this is not good business and that we shouldn't have to foot the bill for the city's failure. It's just wild stuff. I mean, a 10 point something percent sales tax, and it's going to, the problem now becomes cyclical. So what does that sales tax do? Well, it's going to hurt businesses, right? At a time when businesses are already struggling, at a time when businesses just got hit with a massive B&O tax increase. And so then you're going to have more businesses close. So as the businesses close, you lose all of the tax revenue they would give you, all of it, including the massive new B&O tax increase. And then you lose that, and all the money you planned for that was going to come from that is gone. And so then what do? They're going to come back and raise other taxes to try to fill the gap, because they can never go back in budget. That's never an option. Think of how much extra money we would have if we could get a hold of the homeless crisis and the drug crisis once and for all, if we could do things that really worked, think of how much extra money that would free up. In Portland, $700 million a year alone, just like that. If you could have a manageable homeless crisis and a manageable homeless population, you're never going to get rid of it entirely. But right now, they're spending almost $1 billion a year just in Portland. Similar spending here in Seattle, similar spending in San Francisco. You want to pay the government to pay for all these woke agenda items, these boutique desires of the far left? Well, hell, let's free up $700 million a year and actually fix this problem once and for all. It doesn't take more money. It takes political willpower and it takes common sense. All right, speaking of a lack of common sense, I'm a little torn on this one, but Seattle's trying to come up with a creative way to fight the sex trafficking operations that are taking over, in particular, the north part of the city. I'm not sure this is going to work, but we'll talk about it next. A reminder, next week, I will be at the Meydenbauer Center in Bellevue, October 22nd and 23rd. I'm hosting a panel discussion on how the media covers housing policy. My friend Jonathan Cho will also be there. And we'll also dive into, I think, the homeless crisis and the housing stuff around that and rent control and all these new things. It should be a good time. It was standing room only last year at our panel, and we took questions and all of that. So join us for that at the Meydenbauer Center. You do have to sign up. Go to rhawa.org, R-H-A-Y. And while you're there, if you're a small to mid-sized landlord in the state of Washington, make sure you sign up to become a member of RHA. It's like $260 a year, and they can help you navigate the complex world of rules, regulations, and laws pertaining to housing providers, rhawa.org. All right, if you go up to Aurora Avenue in Seattle to try to get you a sex worker, beware! You might not be arrested, but you will instead get a strongly worded letter in the mail. Let's talk about it in our segment. Unbelievable. Nicole, you giggled. Like, are you going up to get a sex worker? That's where they do it. Aurora Avenue.
I know. I feel bad for people. I mean, it makes you want to just not drive in that area just in case.
Yep. So here is a creative solution. And I think over time, I don't even know if it's really a progressive mindset, but the idea of focusing more on eliminating the demand for sex workers than going after the sex workers themselves. You know, a lot of them are not up there by choice per se. You have human trafficking, you have sex trafficking, you've got pimps and threats and drugs and all these things involved in it. So I actually support the idea of going after the buyers. Because if you can eliminate the buyers, then you eliminate the, you know, trafficking industry altogether. But here's a new tactic from King 5 News. Seattle tests new approach to combat sex trafficking on Aurora Avenue. The city has launched a pilot program that sends warning letters to the homes of suspected sex buyers. When I first heard this,
the wrong person opening.
Right, all I could think about is some wife is going to open a letter and is not going to be happy. And maybe that's the point.
Oh, because if the car is not in your name and you just happen to be driving your wife's car that day.
Ooh. Yes, it might be a deterrent. It says Seattle's launched a pilot program that sends warning letters to the homes of suspected sex buyers along Aurora Avenue North, a new tactic aimed at reducing commercial sex exploitation in the area, where police estimate 500 to 1,000 people are sexually exploited each month. The program, which began a week and a half ago, involves photographing license plates of vehicles suspected of engaging in illegal sexual exploitation activity and mailing deterrence letters to the registered owners. Three Seattle Police Department detectives trained in anti-trafficking work are carrying out the initiative. The chief of public safety for Mayor Bruce Harrell said there is clear research and data that indicates that a letter sent home to your family saying that you were in an area or soliciting sex would deter 80% of those trying to buy sex. Now, do we have the letter?
That was happening, but how do you know that's happening?
Let's take a look at the letter before I comment on my thoughts about this. So apparently this is what the letter would look like. It would come in the mail from the city of Seattle. The bullet point on the letter would say, suspected illegal sexual exploitation activity on Aurora Avenue North. Dear registered owner of vehicle, this letter is to notify you that a vehicle registered to your name was observed by detectives with the Seattle Police Department Human Trafficking Unit on Aurora Avenue North engaged in suspected illegal sexual exploitation activity, more commonly known as soliciting or patronizing a prostitute. This area of Aurora Avenue is known for its high volume of sex exploitation. Specific details and photographs of the activity associated with your vehicle are included below and attached. So they put on there make, model, license plate, time, location, observations. So the detectives will say what the vehicle was observed doing. And then to top it all off, they will include photos they took to back it up. It says, the purpose of this letter is to serve as a warning to you that persons operating your vehicle were engaged in suspected sexual exploitation activity. SPD is not accusing you of a crime, and no criminal charges will follow based on this incident. If you or someone you know needs help in order to stop sexual exploitation activity, there are nonprofit organizations that may be able to assist. So first, I do think it's funny. I do the idea of this letter coming to someone's home and a wife opening it up because dude was out there trying to find a hooker on Aurora makes me laugh. I think that's quite funny. There's a couple concerns I have. You could really ruin someone's life in a marriage if you don't get that right. And I get it that it's trained detectives who are sending this letter and what they identify. And I'm sure that most of the time they know what a John soliciting a hooker looks like. But let's say you get it wrong, because there's no burden of proof, so to speak, to send this letter, because it's not a criminal complaint. So let's say you got it wrong, and it was just homeboy trying to get to work, asking the hooker, do you know? Hey, do you know where the so-and-so is? And all of a sudden, there's a picture. So that concerns me.
Don't you think that they have to see them get in the vehicle?
It doesn't say that.
Hey, can you show me where the bank is?
Doesn't say that. That's one of my concerns, is you're going to be sending letters home to some people and you might ruin marriages over this when there's no validity to it. The other more obvious concern is this. Arrest them. You're telling me you'll have detectives out monitoring the activity, taking pictures of it, collecting evidence, writing a narrative about what they saw, time and place, and instead of, I don't know, going to arrest them, you let them drive off and you spend time writing them a strongly worded letter to suggest they not do it again. Wouldn't it just be easier to arrest them?
Well, I think they're trying to use resources that they already have. So they're using traffic cameras that are already in place to capture this, and then they're just going to use that. Like, they don't have the resources to put the cops on the street to go arrest.
Well, they said that there's going to be detectives who are tasked with carrying out the initiative. So it does have to include detective manpower. Right. Yeah. But we don't know that it's not on the street. It didn't say that.
I think they say we're utilizing resources already, the cameras
already. And certainly that can help it. But if you have enough evidence that someone you strongly believe is soliciting a prostitute, build a case and charge them with a crime. Instead, you're sending a strongly worded letter home that they may or may not read. And if it's them that gets it and not like a spouse or something, they're just going to tear it up. And you're assuming that there's even someone at home who they'd be shamed by it. So just, or do both. Build a case and arrest them and charge them with solicitation of a prostitute, and also send a letter home.
I was going to say, do you think it's too hard to build these cases? Do you think they're losing too many of these cases?
No, I don't think they're trying.
Yeah.
I think that their resources are probably stretched thin.
Yep.
And they're not focused on what's happening, like actually going out and affecting the arrests. That's fine. But if you have instances where you have that much evidence that's put in that letter, at least, you know, pick them up. And if the case doesn't stick, the case doesn't stick.
At least they're not scared.
But it just seems like one of these soft on, let's send a strongly worded letter home instead of, I don't know, putting handcuffs on them. Because to me, what would make me really think twice? Yeah. Like if I got a strongly worded letter saying, don't do this anymore, or if I got put in handcuffs in the back of a cop car, probably the latter. Mm-hmm. So it's, again, the soft on crime. I don't think it's going to make a difference approach.
I think it's interesting that they snuck this out. Like, this started last week and nobody knew about it.
Yeah.
They were just like, we'll just sneak this out. I'm surprised Harold's not saying, hey, look what I'm doing to try to stop sex trafficking.
He's probably not saying that because it's such a stupid idea.
I know.
Funny, but it's a stupid idea. All right. We'll get to some national news coming up next, including Trump might be sending the feds into San Francisco. He's threatened that before. It hasn't happened yet, so we'll see. First, if you are thinking about selling your home now or in the near future, reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. There are a lot of listings out there. They're sitting for a little longer than usual, and so really having someone who knows the market, who's been doing it for a long time, who can help you navigate the market as it stands today is going to be beneficial to you. And Wes has been doing this forever in the state of Washington. Washington and in Western Washington. And so he can kind of walk you through things, do a free market analysis, set your expectations, talk to you about where to price the home, because it is strategic, certainly. And then I especially recommend Wes if you know that you need some cosmetic upgrades to your home, because he can come in, tell you which ones are worth it and not worth it. He can manage those projects, and you don't even have to pay for the upgrades until closing. So it takes that financial stress off the plate. So sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. It really just is a better way to sell your home. All right, a little bit of national news. President Donald Trump, and you never know with him. Is this an off-the-cuff thing? Is he really going to do it? Will the courts let him do it? But he was talking about what's happening in some of these blue cities like Chicago and Memphis. And he mentioned perhaps San Francisco being the next place that he wants to target for a broader federally driven law enforcement effort.
Chicago recently had one deal where they had 11 murders in one weekend. And they said, well, yeah, but it was a holiday weekend. They actually told me that was the reason, like it was OK because it was a holiday. It was Labor Day. These people are the worst. But these are great cities that could be fixed. I'm going to be strongly recommending, at the request of government officials, which is always nice, that you start looking at San Francisco. I think we can make San Francisco. There's one of our great cities 10 years ago, 15 years ago, and now it's a mess. And we have great support in San Francisco, so I'd like to recommend that for inclusion.
Yeah, so I heard that. I was like, do you have great support in San Francisco? I don't know if there were some local elected officials who told him behind the scenes, but right now none of them have come out publicly and said, yes, we want President Donald Trump and the National Guard here. This from San Francisco Gate. Stay the hell out. SF leaders blast Trump's call to send in the National Guard. It says state and local officials quickly pushed back on Trump's proposal. Rafael Mandelman, president of San Francisco's Board of Supervisors, told SF Gate he would be surprised if any local official asked for the National Guard. He said, I can't imagine what good would come from deploying military troops on San Francisco's streets, and I can't imagine a lot of harm. Gavin Newsom said, Trump, San Francisco was a great city 15 years ago. This is funny. This is actually funny. So Gavin Newsom was the mayor of San Francisco. Mm-hmm. And Trump said, oh, well, San Francisco was a great city 15 years ago. And Gavin Newsom said, why, thank you, which is actually kind of funny, right? It is kind of funny. Senator Scott Weiner said, San Francisco neither needs nor wants Trump's personal army on our streets. Contrary to Trump's lie, no government officials here have requested federal occupation. We don't need Trump's authoritarian crackdown in our city. Bottom line, stay the hell out of San Francisco. And Scott Weiner is a total cuckoo crazy guy. But look, as I've said many times before, I do think San Francisco needs the help. I think San Francisco needs a lot of help. I think Portland needs help. I think Seattle needs help. And I think sane leaders would say, hey, let's work with you on this. The more, the better. Send us more FBI agents, send us the DEA, send us the ATF. They can work hand in hand with local police departments to eradicate the drug trade, to go out there and take stolen or illegal guns off the street. You know, yeah, let's put, you know, a member of the National Guard on every corner. Don't have to be armed, but it can act as some sort of visual deterrent to some of the crime crisis. So sane leaders would work together on this. That being said, I don't support it being forced on any city. And I can say that a million times ad nauseum. I don't want that power abused, because I don't want it abused by a Democratic president who would send troops to a city for Lord knows what. So we'll see what happens here. But I wish the president would name names if he did indeed have local San Francisco leaders, politicians or bureaucrats who did ask him to come there. It would be helpful to have some names to refer to. But, you know, all of this is happening, and there's going to be a No Kings protest this weekend across the country, like the last one. And Seattle's supposed to have a massive one, and all these other cities. And, you know, they're really acting like there's this groundswell of anger at President Donald Trump and at the threat to deploy the military and at the immigration enforcement effort. But, you know, the polling doesn't really bear that out. In fact, even CNN was acknowledging that, you know, overall, it seems like Democratic favorability is just getting worse and worse.
Well, we were looking at the Democrats with a very clear shot of taking control of the U.S. House of Representatives, according to the Kalshi prediction market odds. We saw them in an 83% chance, but those odds have gone plummeting down. Now we're talking about just a 63% chance, while the GOP's chances up like a rocket, up like gold, up from 17% to now a 37% chance.
Yeah. So, and they still, and this is when you're the party out of power, the midterms are usually better for you. I mean, that's just typically. So historically, if you're looking at the odds, Democrats would automatically have an advantage. But despite all they're saying about, oh, Trump's policies are harmful, people don't like it, I think people do. Those people aren't as vocal. Those people aren't showing up in, by the tens of thousands to, you know, protest no kings. But they like what he's doing. And I'm one of them. You know, I don't support everything. Like I just said, you know, I don't like that he threatens cities with National Guard troops, even though I think it could be beneficial to those cities. But it hasn't made me like President Trump any less. You know, I like a lot of what he's doing. And then what did he say today? He's on his way to meet with Putin to try
Hungary,
to
I think.
End the war mm-hmm. in Ukraine. Like, I'm sorry, I told Nicole I joked. It's only half a joke. If he ends the war in Ukraine, I might be in support of changing the Constitution to allow him to run for a third term.
Right.
I might be in support of him just being able to be the president
if
until
he accomplishes
dies. If he get all
world
the first
peace
year, right?
His so, first year.
Yeah, and he's just term. Doing, and they can focus on this, but you know, all what he's done globally, I mean, people aren't dumb. They see that for what it is. And even the polling on who's responsible for the government shutdown and who's to blame isn't boding well for Democrats. So, all right, let's go all the way to the other side of the other corner of the country. We're going to talk about education and what's happening in Florida. It is our weekly segment, Florida Report.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Miranda, hello.
Hello.
Hello. We're talking about education in Florida, which is always, this is the funnest topic, I think, to discuss on Florida Report because the differences are just so profound in a lot of ways. But then you have these little random things that pop up in Florida like they do in the school districts here. I think the difference is how the state of Florida reacts when there is some sort of, you know, political, social agenda being pushed on kids there. There, when they find out about it, they're like, hell no. Here, when they find out about it, they're like, great job, you know? All right, so there's a state lawmaker who has introduced a measure, HB 147. It would require public school teachers to take an oath to uphold the U.S. and state constitutions. Okay, so I'm going to read the oath, all right, that they are in this law suggesting that all school teachers take. Sorry, where's my, like, Black Lives Matter handbook? Isn't that what I would have to take an oath to? I do solemnly swear or affirm that I will support, protect, and defend the Constitution and government of the United States and the Constitution and government of the state of Florida, that I am duly qualified for employment as a classroom teacher in this state, that I will well and faithfully perform the duties of a classroom teacher in a professional, independent, objective, and nonpartisan manner, that I will uphold the highest standards of academic integrity and professional ethics, that I will foster a respectful learning environment for all students, which promotes critical thinking, civic responsibility, and lifelong learning, and that I will serve as a positive role model in both conduct and character. So help me God.
I love it.
Do you love it? I think it's unnecessary.
I do and I don't. I mean, I think when you are, your salary comes from taxpayer money.
Yeah.
I do think that you kind of have an obligation to the taxpayers, who have an obligation to the nation, and we all kind of live under this, you know, umbrella of the Constitution. And there are other, like, other occupations that make oaths, doctors, law enforcement agencies, all that kind of stuff. So making teachers, like, affirm and understand that, like, this job isn't just for fun, like, it's very serious. You really are, you know, training the next generation of Americans to go out and go forth and be productive. And just putting it out there from the jump when you get hired, like, I'm not here to push my agenda on kids. This is, you know, very clear. And I don't have a problem with making it abundantly clear from the beginning.
Yeah, I guess, you know, kind of how would they go about punishing a teacher who in their mind, you know, violated their oath, you know, trying to remove them from their job or whatever. I mean, I do agree with the concept, I guess, that you say it. If you're anyone in a public capacity, but, like, who would you extend that to, you know? I mean, roadway workers take an oath to fill in all the potholes they see, you know. So I get it. I just don't think an oath will stop teachers who are set on trying to push their agenda on kids from doing it. I think what really matters is how the state of Florida responds to it. Yeah, and in that regard, so there was, and this is what I mentioned by, you know, there are going to be individual instances in Florida, as different as it is politically, where these, you know, kind of woke things pop up. So there's a school district in Florida that allegedly denied a student the ability to start a Turning Point USA chapter. I mean, these have been just proliferating after the assassination of Charlie Kirk. And so, you know, in Washington State, if that happened, our governor and everybody would be like, yeah, you can't have that hateful group on campus. But in your state attorney general is now demanding that the school district come into compliance with what it says is state law and reverse course.
Yeah, he penned a nicely worded two-page letter to the superintendent and the school board, providing many examples as to why what they did was not constitutional and not legal based on even the school board's own principles. And there was a couple, you know, a couple paragraphs in there that I kind of wanted to focus on because I just really liked what they said. So one of them would be Suwannee High School's refusal to allow its students to start a Turning Point USA chapter because of its perceived political nature runs afoul of the school board's policy and the ethical obligations of Florida educators. It may also raise constitutional concerns that this office is equipped to enforce. It also goes on to say, Turning Point USA and its founder, Charlie Kirk, has exemplified a return to civic and peaceful debate, even on the day's most hotly contested issues. It's admirable that one of your students wants to bring a chapter and those values to Suwannee High School. It's not only permissible, it is an affirmative good the school should be encouraging and embracing. Good sense should dictate the correct decision here. Failing that, however, the law demands it.
Yeah, they're going to definitely, I mean, try to force their hand. And I guess the school said the student could have a club, but they couldn't call it Turning Point USA, right? They could call it the Constitution Club or a debate club. But so they could have a club, couldn't hold meetings on campus, couldn't call it Turning Point USA.
Yeah, and in that regard, I don't have to ask the student's permission at all if I can't even hold the club on campus. Like, right. Why would I even need their permission?
The school's permission, right. If you're going to say, don't, you can't have this club on campus, okay, then you can't tell me what it can be called and I'll call it whatever I want to call it. It's very strange. Now, yeah. I do get it. So the school board said, you know, this is like this hot button issue and we just don't want it at the school.
Yeah,
I don't think a student club should be able to be anything, right? Only because, I mean, think of the absolute worst case examples. Like, they're not going to let you have a KKK club, you know? And so there's going to be some obvious outliers. But I guess, where do you draw the line as a school? If you're allowing any sort of school club, I mean, this came up with like the freedom of religion issue when there was the coach here who kneeled on the 50-yard line. And I was sort of like, gosh, I don't know if I agree with him, because then you'd have the Satanists, you know, doing a pentagram in the middle on the 50-yard line. So it's always a slippery slope.
It is. But I also think the concept of Turning Point got super skewed in this like volatile political, you know, climate we live in.
Yeah.
It's really just, like it said in the letter, like bringing civil debate. And just because one side can't come to the microphone with good arguments doesn't mean that the other side is inherently wrong or bad. Mm-hmm. So like the microphone goes both ways in this club. And I just think that people, they fail to realize that even when I'm online and people are talking about Charlie Kirk and Turning Point and how it's bad and this and that, but like you had every opportunity and you still have every opportunity to come with your side of the debate.
Yeah.
So I don't see how it's, like you said, it's inherently a good thing. Like, I don't know why you wouldn't want your kids in your schools to have civil discourse.
Well, and to even get together and form clubs and, you know, build friendships and relationships, even at the very base level, be part of something you believe in, you know, and somebody can start a freaking anti-Charlie Kirk club if they want to, and then the kids can all gather in there. I mean, in Washington State, they allow clubs where white kids can't participate. I mean, they have a student club in the Seattle Public School District that held a walkout to literally celebrate the October 7th attack as like a momentous moment for the world. So they all allow all sorts of nonsense stuff. There is a free speech argument. So this is obviously insane. And I hope that your state attorney general is successful in changing the school district's mind. All right, Miranda, thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Yeah, Yeah, not just Florida. I mean, we've seen that elsewhere. Actually, right now in Oregon, there are students protesting because they're not being allowed to start a Turning Point USA / Charlie Kirk club. So I think that that is going to happen everywhere, regardless of what kind of state it is, here and there. But it, you know, how do states deal with it and how is it all rectified? All right, let's get to On That Subject from Florida Report, our daily subscriber show poll coming up next. So I hope you took it. First, our newest sponsors here on Undivided is Valentine Roofing. And look, if you're a homeowner, you all, every homeowner knows exactly how much life their roof has left, because it's one of the biggest purchases that you have to make as a homeowner is to replace your roof. And so it certainly is something that you are aware. What's the timeline? How much life does my roof have left? So, you know, if you know that it's at the end of its life, call Valentine Roofing, schedule an assessment. And they might say, actually, you know, your roof's got a little more time left on it. Or if there's a repair that they can make, they're going to do that. They're not going to push you into buying a new roof unless you absolutely need it. But if you do need it, one of the great things about Valentine is they offer zero down financing for most projects. So you can get the work done now and pay over time, which is a huge relief. And by the way, they do more than just roofing. They do new siding, gutters, attic insulation, exterior cleaning. You can expect the same great service. So schedule your free estimate with our friends at Valentine by calling 206-ROOFING. Again, call 206-ROOFING. Do not wait until it's too late and there's heavy rains, then you've got a leak, and then it becomes an emergency situation. Call 206-ROOFING, 206-ROOFING, and please tell them you heard about them here on Undivided. All right, in our daily subscriber show poll on Patreon, Locals, and X, I asked you about this oath that a new law, as Miranda and I discussed, in Florida is proposing to make for public school teachers in Florida. I read it there on the show, what it would entail, basically pledging to not be ideologically driven and uphold the Constitution of the U.S. and the state of Florida. So I asked you guys if you would support an oath like this for teachers. Nicole, yay or nay?
I'm kind of with Miranda on I would support it for all public employees.
What would that oath look like for like a WashDOT worker?
However, though? I mean, because we all should support the Constitution, right? However, I don't know that you necessarily need to like stand there and put your hand up or anything, but maybe just sign something when you get your job and say, yeah, I get it. Like, I've read the Constitution. I know what I'm doing here.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there definitely is probably for public school teachers some sort of employment agreement you sign, right? That's about sort of how you conduct yourself as a teacher. So, but definitely not a pledge. And what would they pledge on, you know? Would it be that book that we read the other day, the story of unknown Americans that talks about all sorts of nasty sexual stuff to kids? Would they get to pick the book they took the oath on? Then I'd have quite a concern with that.
Yeah, what is it that the sex ed handbook that we all decided on? I can't think of what that's called now, that syllabus.
But, you can take the pledge on anything. RC, so most subscribers saying yes, 85% saying you support it, a couple people don't. RC says loyalty to the federal and state constitutions, yes. Loyalty to the government, nope. I voted yes, but oaths don't seem to mean much to people anymore, as evidenced by the state of affairs with some of our doctors and many of our politicians. Great point there. Like, doctors take an oath to do no harm and they're mutilating kids with their radical gender ideology and nothing happens to them. He says, we've lost our way, so in the end, I think it will be a meaningless and performative thing. Kathleen says the God part should not be in there, not necessary, and maybe off-putting to some people. I don't see the letter this letter changing anything. The teachers' union seems to have the final say. Pat, teachers are held to a high standard because of the young lives they are entrusted with. Travis, I actually think it's a good idea to implement here in Washington, put the emphasis on upholding the U.S. Constitution and state constitution, just as how every public service or government job should be. So kind of similar to Nicole and Miranda's thoughts on that. Let's see here. Over on Locals, Catherine Howard says, yes, I would support that, but the oath is too long. Yeah, I agree with you. Let's chop that thing up. Let's get to the point. I agree, Catherine. Todd Welch says it's unnecessary, potentially coercive, or risks being performative without being enforceable, especially with vague terms like nonpartisan or, quote, positive role model. That's true, because who gets to decide what a positive role model is? I'm sure there's some of these whacked out teachers in Washington who think they're being positive role models to their kids right. by pushing a pride agenda on them. So it's really hard. You're right, totally subjective. And how do you enforce something that is so subjective? Okay, let's get to some other comments and questions from our live stream today. On the Progressive Institute trying to justify the attacks on signature gatherers, it's like, we don't support signature gatherers being attacked. Wink, wink, but actually just go do it. Yes, totally fine. Sorry, that was my effort to wink.
Amazing article.
Horrible. Stupid also. I think I get that now. Stupod also, like stupid.
Stupid gotcha.
The projection and cognitive dissonance from the leftists is stunning. Aaron Stevens on Facebook, they don't want smart, informed Washingtonians. They want radicalized, indoctrinated youth. School mm-hmm. test scores in the public school system is a shining example. I agree. I'm sad it's Thursday. I just thought of that. I like talking to you guys every day. Seattle sales tax increase to fund public safety efforts. Edwin Gerlish, people are leaving Washington State in droves. What happens when your tax base isn't there to fund your pathetic interests? I agree. That's the problem. Then they'll just find other taxes to increase. Then the taxes just go up for all of us.
One of the examples they used is that a $25,000 car, which what car is $25,000 anymore? None. But that's a $25 increase. It's only $25. But that's what they say, that 1%, like 0.1%.
Right now,
so
okay.
it is like the 0.1% is $25. However, the almost 11%
right.
total tax makes it almost $2,000. Yeah. You know,
they always talk about it in terms of what the increase is and never in and terms never, of what the total mm-hmm. is. So they make it sound like it's less.
And you know, like, I mean, that will you buy a car in Seattle? If a $40,000 car is costing you over $4,000 or $5,000 more because of taxes. Yeah, nobody's buying a car in Seattle. So those are businesses that will be hurt, and other, you know, the Louis Vuitton mm-hmm. stores, like any of the, you know, luxury shopping that's done in the city. Nobody's doing that in Seattle now. They're going to go straight to Bellevue or wherever else. They don't have to pay that tax.
Huge detrimental mm-hmm. impact on the suspected sex buyers getting warning letters in the mail. Andy Silly says, on the city sending warning letters, how about the city of Portland sends similar letters to the families of suspected furries demonstrating at the ICE facility? Yes, we suspect that someone at this address has been dressing like a furry and provoking ICE. Jason M., you've got mail. Might as well shut down Lowe's and Home Depot up there as well. Are Lowe's and Home Depot like common areas for them running tricks? Maybe.
I don't know.
Or you talk about like illegals gathering outside for work.
Which I think they already do a little, you know, surveillance in those areas because of
sure.
that.
Yes.
But I do think that since they kind of cracked down on it and there's less, that people are just dressing more scantily.
Oh.
I mean, some of the videos that I've seen from, I think it's Cho mm-hmm. down there and stuff. Yikes.
They're just,
I
like,
do not remember
nude.
Seeing that.
They used to at least have something covering their tatas. Now they just walk around Atlanta. With their tatas out. It really is something else. Let's see here. On Trump maybe going to San Francisco, De Pluribus Unum 3128. Leftists are not afraid of Trump ruining the country. They are afraid of him succeeding. He will show how dumb they are.
I do think that's true. They're more afraid of his success than they are of him.
That's why they were so quiet after the peace deal. Mm-hmm. You know, some were still like, oh, but it's a Trump peace deal. But for the most part, they were pretty quiet because mm-hmm. it was really hard to spin. And it'll be really hard to spin an end to the war in Ukraine if he's able to accomplish that. Graham Robbins, this midterm will be much different than normal, just like most folks didn't vocally support Trump, but they did vote for Trump and they will not vote Democrat this time either. I don't know. Midterms are tough. When you're the party in power, midterms are always tough for you. And in Washington State, I think it's going to be difficult to be a Republican on the ballot in the midterms coming up in a couple weeks.
It is going to be interesting to see, too, how much he can get done in a year and then have 3 years of just kind of, hey, look. We're just maintaining and we're done. What are you going to whine about?
Or what else is he going to do though once because the border's done and all these main issues? I mean, it's always something you've got to continue to push forward
on.
Sure, but
maybe like the chaos kind of settles down. And so maybe then he leaves office with less chaos and they're...
I don't think Dems will ever allow it to not feel chaotic, because they are always going to be orange man bad, orange man evil, orange man fascist, orange man Hitler, because that is their main talking point. So they'll always find a way to paint him like that.
For sure.
And whoever comes after him. Yeah.
But yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Wild. Okay, a couple super chats I need to get to. Wow, you guys are just so generous today. Bill Biz, new tax for public safety. You would think that topic should have been prioritized with the allocation of existing tax revenues. I agree. Mm-hmm. Sauce says funds for the Antifa dismantling. Yes, we're working on it. Mad Max, I made a citizen's arrest at the Puyallup Home Depot. You covered all the other ones. I guess mine didn't fit your narrative. Real men are being...
I emailed you back and said, send me the video.
Don't be mean.
Don't be rude.
I don't see everything. I hate it when people always assume if I don't do something, it's because it didn't fit my narrative. There are many stories. Nicole says she emailed you. I requested the video from Puyallup. Got a lot going on. Don't snap at me. It was like some lady that texted me the other day questioning my motives that did something. We're doing our best.
On Let's Go Washington, they have a list. There's about 70 or maybe like 50 to 60 incidents. So they're keeping a list of all of them.
Happening like every day. Let's see. Adorable, deplorable, $5 just cause. Ronald Spin says, I love Undivided. Thank you. And Catherine says, Brandy, please cover the Universal Ostrich Farm story. That rings a bell. Aren't they going to kill a bunch of ostriches at some farm in Canada?
Oh, I do not like that at all.
I think that's what it is, isn't it? You know what, Catherine? I'll look into that because it rings a bell, but I'm not 100% sure what it is. So I'll look into it. Nicole will Google while I read our next ad read.
I will not like that. That will really bum me out.
I know. It would bum me out too. You know, I love the ostriches. All right, we'll have our closing sanity check coming up next. First, if you're worried about the global markets, maybe, with the peace deals, great, but also it can have an impact on the global market as well. What's happening nationally, and you're concerned about your retirement portfolio, you just don't know how well equipped it is to handle what may come, reach out to our friend Zach Abraham at Bulwark Capital. Go to knowyourriskpodcast.com, knowyourriskpodcast.com. Zach and his team specialize in managing risk. So that's the lens that they're going to look at your retirement portfolio under to sort of assess, are you properly protected against risk or not? And then he'll kind of make his recommendations. So if you go Know Your Risk Podcast, ask Zach for a free risk assessment. And during that, he'll share his basic fundamentals of value investing, a perspective on the outlook for the rest of 2025 into 2026. And then they'll do a full reveal of how Bulwark is always looking for opportunities proactively to lower risk, lower cost, and give your retirement as much upside as possible, which is what every single one of us wants, to be able to have the best, be in the best position to have the best retirement that we possibly can. KnowYourRiskPodcast.com. And with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. All right, still looking more and more likely that the socialist Mamdani is going to be the next mayor of New York City, which again, just for the fact that he has never had a real job, it just blows my mind how he's been able to grift his way to potentially becoming the mayor of the largest city in the country. But also, it surprises me because he believes things like this.
So a lot of individuals in this city pay more than 50% of their income in taxes. When you talk about a fair share, how much more than, what is the fair share? What's the number?
I've said that we should increase personal income taxes by
2%. Is fair?
And my point is this.
Give up more than half of your income. That's
if you're making $1 million in New York City, or more than that, you can afford to pay 2% more. And the reasons you can afford to do so is because that money will be used to better your quality of life as well.
Sure it will. Yeah. More than half of everything you make, Mamdani wants to take. And how much of it? Was it $68 million he wants to spend on taxpayer-funded gender care for transgender people? Yeah, that's not going to make your life better. It's going to push his political agenda. But again, vote blue no matter who. And that is the sentiment of too many New Yorkers. That has been our closing sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided, this week's episode of Undivided. Again, if you want to join us on Sundays with subscribers, this week we're going to have independent journalist Andy Ngo, who literally wrote the book on unmasking Antifa. We're going to be talking a lot about all the conversations we had at the White House and beyond about how to dismantle Antifa. So am I missing something? You're looking at me like I'm forgetting something. No?
No.
So join us for Sundays with subscribers. Go Mariners, I guess. Sorry. I don't know. I don't like all the woke sports teams. But yay, go Mariners. That has been today's episode. Join us on Sundays with subscribers. Sign up to become a subscriber. UndividedPod.com. UndividedPod.com. And just click on the banner that says support the show. That's the best way. I get people asking all the time, how could I support you? Just $5 a month. That's all you need to do. UndividedPod.com. Subscribers, we'll see you Sunday on Sundays with Subscribers. The rest of you, we will just have to settle for seeing you Monday at noon. Have a fantastic weekend.